something happened on America's birthday.
We do not know who.
One more competitor would arrive, chartering a helicopter. One more competitor would step forward and attempt to save what had been indeed an embarrassment for America. As Yokozuna and Mr. Fuji looked on wondering just who had the gall, who had the audacity at the very last moment to step forward. Fans couldn't believe their eyes
way to the ring.
As they said,
ladies,
no, could it be? Yes, it was Lex Luger. Lex Luger, who had always been proud of himself. We found out on that day he was proud of America as well. And with a look of determination in his eyes, he made his way to the ring, shoving Bobby Heenan aside, shoving anyone aside who would stand in his way. He was America's last hope, the last chance of America for someone to step forward. Or would Luger be embarrassed like all of the other competitors as the capacity crowd began to chant, Lex, Lex? You know he could feel their spirit. He could feel the power of the thousands of fans who had turned out on America's birthday.
The contest is over, and you're too late.
But was it too late?
Something. Ever since King of the Ring, I had an itch under my skin that became a rash. What you are is a cancer, and the World Wrestling Federation, everybody wants to know, wait a second, everybody wants to know what's wrong with America. There's nothing wrong with America. What's wrong with America is blood-sucking leeches like you and overstuffed, sushi-eating, rice-chopping wrestler you call a champion. He's a disgrace to the World Wrestling Federation. The only thing wrong with America is you, and we're going to clean house right here, right now.
Mr. Fuji spat on Lex Luger as if he was spitting on America. And with that, Mr. Fuji went for the ride he'll never forget. And Lex Luger began to prepare. Prepare, yes, for the slam. Prepare for the attempt. And the look of intensity in his eye told the whole story. And then from there it happened, a 550-pounder charge. Luger ducking out of the way, nailing Yokozuna with a 6-inch steel plate in the forearm. And from there, yes, yes, it was unbelievable. Lex Luger had done it. Lex Luger had accomplished the impossible. He slammed the 550-pound champion down to the mat. The USS Intrepid.
All right, everybody, welcome to Talking Tights. This is Wesley Burris and my co-host Taylor Griggs.
See,
and that was a little bit of a snippet. I don't know if that's going to be frowned upon or not. Who gives a damn? Who's listening? From the July 4th, 1993, aboard the USS Intrepid, Lex Luger, body slamming the world champion, Yokozuna.
How many people they had out to do that?
No, I don't.
They had, apart from the WWF superstars that did it, there was professional athletes. Peter Taglinati, you was ever heard that before?
No. Was this a word?
I don't know. Scott Burrell, Bill Frail, or Fraley?
I don't know. You're reading it, not me.
I don't know who any of these people are to be professional athletes.
All right. I've never seen the whole thing.
And Crush, Tatanka, Bob Backlund.
Just
Steiners.
Both Steiners?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the Lex Express.
Yeah. Well,
he did it.
Hogan couldn't get him over. I don't think could body slam him there.
Hogan wasn't at that.
No. Oh, he wasn't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I thought he was for some reason.
No, well, he only makes the big shows.
The big towns. All right. This week's episode is a pretty fun era. It's got a lot of bad stuff going on, and then it starts to turn a corner. But this is going to be a two-parter on the WWF New Generation. So this is going to they started this at the end of 93, Taylor. We're not going to start there on our Hulkamania episode, which is our last episode. We ran through the pay-per-views all the way through King of the Ring 93 because we did all the the Hulkster era. So we've talked about the new guys, Bret Hart, Lex Luger coming in, even though he'd been in the NWA for years, drawing pretty good money. He was coming over here now, and Vince McMahon had a concept for the World Bodybuilding Federation, and that's why he really wanted to poach Lex Luger from
WCW.
Jim Crockwell, yeah, WCW at the time. You're actually right, yeah. It was WCW.
Paying him like $400,000 a year, I think.
Big money for the early 90s. Pretty damn big money. Nothing he probably
for the Bodybuilding Federation.
Yeah, for that. Just to work. Yeah. So you're already losing money when you're Vince McMahon. You're not on NBC anymore for your primetime Saturday night's main event. You've moved to Fox. This is in 92. I think they only did two of those shows that year, which was the fewest that they did since its inception. So we've moved on, and your new superstars are Bret the Hitman Hart, Shawn Michaels, Lex Luger,
Yokozuna.
1-2-3 Kid will come along later. We'll get into him.
Tatanka.
Tatanka. It's a bunch of new faces, a lot of gimmicks. And then a little bit after this, we're going to get into the kind of the, what did they call it? Is the career? It's not career.
The occupational gimmick.
Occupational gimmick. There you go.
That's Duke the Dumpster.
Yes, Duke the Dumpster. Yeah. So we're going to get into all that stuff. Today, I think we're going to do 93 and 94. We're going to see how long this runs. We might go a little bit further, but I think that's where we want to stop, because we're going to talk shit about a couple of these things because they deserve it. This is where I was becoming a really huge fan of wrestling. I liked it when I was little. I really started liking it now. So when I was about 10, 11 years old, that's when it really, really clicked for me. I really started liking it. So whatever. Let's just go give us – how are they drawing post-Hulk Hogan is what I want to – how are the house shows doing? Because they weren't doing well in 92. They were dwindling. I mean, I think you read on the last episode, I might butcher this, but I want to say you said a house with Savage and Flair only did like 5,000 people at a pretty decent size. It was bad. So
well, they're running some smaller venues at the beginning of,
which is smart.
Or I mean, July 93.
WCW did it for years.
They're running like an art center. Sell out 3,400 people.
Well, I mean, that's okay.
They're running Youth and Civic Center. Oh. 3,700 people.
Where would that be at?
That was or be located. Salisbury.
Okay.
Maryland.
Yeah.
Alberta and the Saddle Dome, they drew 6,000.
Well, that's not bad. So this is all in July. Well,
Bret Hart was in the main event, so you know a lot of people were coming to that.
Right. You would do that there. Bret had been coming along since.
Yeah, so July, their house show numbers are terrible. 4,500 at the Spectrum in Philadelphia.
Okay. So we're just kind of giving you a lead up. Lex Luger body slams Yokozuna aboard the USS Intrepid.
Japanese Yokozuna.
Yes. Who is Samoan. And part of the Anoa'i family.
Anoa'i.
I was about to butcher the way I say that. But nonetheless, Yokozuna is on top. Lex Luger is now getting this massive push. He lands on the helicopter next to the battleship or aircraft carrier, whatever it was.
Narcissus?
No, this is post-Narcissus. We went over that in the last episode just briefly.
Right. Yeah.
Heenan was his manager, and they were I think they had plans once the bodybuilding thing fell out because of extenuating circumstances, which we would get into later.
I've read a lot of people say that they think they should have ran with the Narcissus gimmick a little bit longer.
Okay, why?
I mean, a lot of people think they didn't give it enough time.
Luger was
shitty. Terrible.
Awful. He was never a heel. It was never believable.
Well, he's not even believable as a babyface.
A lot of his moves are not believable.
He's got the worst clothesline.
He really does. He has
the worst working
They really
punches.
Started. He got in a motorcycle accident sometime towards the end of his WCW career or either his transition to the World Bodybuilding Federation. And he did have a steel plate in his arm, but I don't – they talked about it. And he started selling – whatever. I remember as a kid, that was his move. It was – for all of you that remember the torture rack, the finisher in the WWE was he was going to run into you with an illegal forearm and knock you out with a steel plate. It's trash, but it is what it is. And so Vince decides to hitch his wagons to him, recoup some of the money, I'm sure, try to draw with the guy. And are you seeing on the house shows – is Lex facing him before the pay-per-view? Because that's something WWF did a lot.
When is the pay-per-view?
That's going to be in August. That's SummerSlam 93. Is where we're going to start the pay-per-view route today.
Yoko and Brett.
Oh, that's in Alberta.
Brett and Lex Luger in Alberta. Shawn's actually main event a lot of these shows. Shawn pinned Glenn Ruth.
That's a main event?
I don't know.
All right. We got to get off of that, and we got to get moving. We were just going to try to hit on.
These are listed. I don't know. It's bad.
Hit on some attendance, which isn't as bad as I initially thought. I mean, we should have gone over this a little bit more. But
gets worse.
I remember most of this stuff. I don't know a lot of the politics going on at the time. I know what I've heard. We're going to cite some different sources today. I've got an article from somewhere that I would normally not follow. It's from Vice. So, politically, I don't agree with them on a lot of things. So, but I don't like to live in an echo chamber either. So I wanted to take a story later on that we're going to read. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you this now and get it out of the way. I read a snippet of it, and I think it's what I want to put out there because I feel like they're going to scrutinize it the most. They're going to paint it in the worst light, and then we can tell you our opinion on it. But we're just going to skim over that later. Now, SummerSlam 93, the Lex Express Tour leading up to this pay-per-view was after Luger body slammed Yokozuna. They did a bus tour, and this is legitimate, and they showed it in film for weeks. he was traveling around the country from town to town and going on tour with them, and they were trying to drum up support for him. This was corny. I remember thinking as a kid, like, okay, I see what they're doing. I didn't think it would work, but I honestly expected them to go with it at the time I did. God almighty. So we move into SummerSlam, and that is going to take place on August 30th, 1993, at the Palace of Auburn Hills in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
That's where the
Pistons play.
Malice at the Palace.
Yeah, 23,954 people here, Taylor. That's a Hogan-free pay-per-view. You just mentioned to me earlier that he was still doing the European tour, the summer European tour, and they were drawing pretty big houses overseas.
Yeah, like 20,000 people.
But this is going to be a Hogan-free pay-per-view. And the here
best,
we go.
The best kind of pay-per-view.
The opening match, Razor Ramon, who is Scott Hall, he defeats Ted DiBiase in 7 minutes and 32 seconds. And this match is nothing terrible. It's nothing unlike what you'd probably.
Who did he
wrestle? Ted DiBiase. Raise your mind.
Okay. I wasn't listening.
Okay, well, whatever. This wasn't a bad match. This DiBiase was hurt at the time, and they and Vince asked him to do the favor, and he said he'd do the favor for Scott Hall.
Do the favor?
Yeah, do the job.
The job.
Yes, right.
J-O-B.
DiBiase, the reason this match had come about is on Raw, Ramon as a heel had gotten pinned by the 1-2-3 kid, who was Sean Waltman, and that was a pretty darn surprising match, and I think when they wrestled again, I think 1-2-3 kid beat him again. And when he did, DiBiase started making fun of him for getting beat by him. So then that went into a feud where DiBiase was saying there's no way he could lose to the 1-2-3 kid. Well, he ended up losing to the 1-2-3 kid, and then he lost to Razor Ramon. But he was beat up at the time, years on the road. Back when he worked at Mid-South and such, I've heard of crazy matches. Don't want to get too far into it. Ted DiBiase was awesome. He really was. And then this is how he pretty much ended his career. All right, so we're going to move into the next match, which is – the Steiner brothers, Ricky and Scotty, and they're taking on the Heavenly Bodies, Taylor.
Tom.
This is Dr. Tom Pritchard and Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey.
Ooh.
A hell of a tag team. They are from Smoky Mountain Wrestling. They are accompanied here by James E. Cornette with the tennis racket in tow. And I want to say at this point in time, he was already in the loud jacket, like blue gimmick or whatever. I might be wrong on that show. He might have still had the red one on. But you know what? This ended up being a hell of a little match. It wasn't too long. It's a WWF match at the time. Again, they're always a little shorter matches. They cram a lot of action in there, though. They don't do a lot of wrestling at this point in time. They had some good work. This was a solid match. The next match we have Shawn Michaels, who we really didn't go into much. He's become an Intercontinental Champion. He was really coming into his own here. Honestly, if he wasn't the best worker in the company right here, he's the second best, or he's right there. At the top, and I think everybody saw that. They saw the charisma, but they had him with a big heavy at this show and several months previous. Kevin Nash had come over from WCW, and he was going to be Diesel. And I think a lot of you guys, longtime WWF fans, are definitely going to remember that. He was just bodyguard, so now, you know, get some heat. It worked. He defeats Mr. Perfect by countout. This is a sort of infamous match because you even see on the WWE DVDs, and I think Shawn mentioned, you know, they didn't deliver here. They didn't bring it. I've seen Scott Keith and some other guys say, you know, everybody on television was really promised a classic, and what you got was a solid match. You didn't get anything fantastic. There's nothing bad. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's not what you expected, especially after a couple months earlier. Perfect and Brett had a better match than they had before, and I'm not knocking Shawn here. I just, for whatever reason, when they ended up touching, maybe they did some matches on house shows that might have been okay. I really don't know. I wouldn't have been able to see those. But this one just wasn't. It wasn't anything great. Moving right along, you have Irwin R. Scheister, who's Mike Rotunda. That's the father of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas.
Bo Wyatt.
And he's got a daughter too. Does his daughter not wrestle?
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
She probably will. She's pretty big.
Defeats the 1-2-3 kid. IRS defeats the 1-2-3 kid. Kind of trash. A match. It kind of is, because 1-2-3 kid should have really been getting a push here.
Yep.
They should have just seen what the fans latched onto him. He was completely different than anybody that was on television wrestling.
Karate?
I mean, look, man, you can look back on it, and even as a kid, it was almost unbelievable because he was smaller than what I was used to, and then you look at him compared to some of the cruiserweights later on. Yeah. He was a lot bigger than them. But he just looked small in the land of the giants. Now, that is what this whole episode's about. The new generation came about because
changing of the guard.
The changing of the way guys looked.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't have the bowling ball shoulders anymore. You couldn't, I mean, and if you did, you better do it legit. And that's really hard to do. And, you know, a lot of guys at this point in time, they were smaller guys, more athletic guys. He was taking the company, not the country, in a different direction. But we're going to go from that to
president.
Vince. He could be.
Taking the contract.
Would that be – he would be interesting. He might even be more interesting than what we have now.
Oh,
he,
absolutely. Honestly, yes. I don't think people are ready. They thought Trump was bad.
Yeah, I don't think they're ready for Vince McMahon. He would never – he might have the ego to try to pull something like that, but whatever. The next match is Bret Hart, and he defeats Doink the Clown, but wait a minute. He was supposed to wrestle Jerry Lawler, who had jumped him after the King of the Ring in 93 when Bret won the crown. King said there's only room in WWF for one king. He's the truth, blah, blah, blah. They basically just have a TV-style feud or whatever. It's just done waiting to try to get some money out of it. Lawler shows up on crutches, says
this
he can't compete.
This is not original Doink.
This is – this is born.
You sure?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. At this point in time, this would have still been born.
I don't think you're right.
Why don't you fucking look it up then? I mean, if you want to call me out on it, then look it up. If you're right, you're right. I'll admit I'm wrong. But, I mean.
When did he die?
When did fuck who die?
Born.
That's something that's still alive a couple years ago. Or he wasn't. Hell, he was talking shit about Kevin Nash on a.
For what?
You have never seen that. I've talked to you about it, I thought. Yeah. Where he says, you said that F word. You know what you said, Kevin Nash. You can never be one of us. And Kevin goes. Talk shit about, hey man, nice Mets cap.
My god,
who are you looking up? What are you doing?
No, I'm looking.
Oh, you want to call me out of some trash? I got to sit here and just bullshit around while
no,
you.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, I can't because we're in the middle of a damn angle match that's big and ends up being pretty damn good. Probably, I mean, this card's actually not that bad. I've watched this show. All right, Braves just got out of a. Jam there.
Yeah, he was back.
When are you trying to explain that he was gone? This would have been an initial like 6-7.
He came back in 92. He left.
But Doink wasn't around before 92.
I'm talking about Bourne.
Yeah, Doink wasn't a thing until Bourne got back there.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
But Steve Kern was playing him too because they were doing that double
house show loops. I could understand that. Yeah,
that's
okay.
Dumb.
It's not dumb.
It is dumb.
Oh, only there should only be one Doink.
Yeah.
Why deprive the fans of having two Doink the Clowns?
Deprive. Well, Matt Bourne's
the
obviously
evil gimmick. The evil gimmick worked. It scared
Matt
Jordan.
Bourne was a better wrestler.
Absolutely.
Than any of the other ones.
I would think he played the character of Doink the Clown better.
No, he was in ring better.
I don't know. Is Steve Kern worse than him?
Yes.
We've talked way too long about these jabronis. God damn. I mean, what are you doing? Anyway, Doink is the fucking substitute. Yeah, it's different. Doink is the substitute for Jerry the King Lawler, who comes out on crutches.
I'll just edit all that out.
The King of Memphis. No, I don't want you to. The King of Memphis, Tennessee's here. He's on commentary, and he's a shit disturber.
Of course.
And after Brett defeats Doink in a solid match, he wrestles Jerry Lawler, and they have a wild little brawl. We're going to put this on Watch Along. Just because you hadn't seen it and didn't know what the fuck I was talking about, we're going to do it. We're going to put this on a Watch Along. It's not terrible. Bret Hart wins by submission to Sharpshooter, and it is later reversed to Jerry Lawler winning by disqualification because Bret won't release the Sharpshooter at the end of the match, and the refs reversed the decision back when that nonsense occurred. Whatever, it didn't end up being bad. It's actually worth watching, in my opinion. Ludwig Borga, who was their big new foreign menace, along with Yokozuna. Just Vince is going to play into that patriotic shit. He defeats Marty Jannetty, Party Marty, in a quick match.
Who'd you just say?
Party Marty.
They don't know the real Party Marty.
The Undertaker. The Undertaker defeats the Giant Gonzalez in a rest in peace match. And I'm pretty sure the only time I ever watched this show was once I got the network and I skipped this match.
So I would imagine so.
I've heard people talk about it. It can't be good. Hell, that might go on a watch along. You know, we might just it very well could.
It sounds like this watch along's getting
The Smoking Guns, Bart Gunn and Billy, along with Tatanka, defeat Bam Bam Bigelow and the Head Shrinkers as Fatu and Samu with Afa and Luna Vachon in the corner. In a six-man tag match. I don't remember that being too bad. I always liked the Head Shrinkers. I honestly did. The old Samoan team was pretty solid. The damn Usos are solid. They don't play heels as well, I don't think, as their kinfolk, but they're solid in ring. I just don't really like them. So then we move on to the main event, which is Lex Luger. And we have been really long on this pay-per-view, but this is a really big one because we told you Vince is hitching his wagon to Lex Luger, right? So you don't, Taylor, you've never watched any of this shit.
No,
so I want you to know, Lex Luger defeats Yokozuna here in 17 minutes and 58 seconds.
My God.
A match that I have seen get as high as 3 or 3.25 stars.
From
Scott Keith. And I want to say
Bret Hart's in it.
In the main event?
Oh.
This match? Oh, it's because, oh, okay, this is what you're doing right now? All right, you just be able to, all right. So, no, this match went 17-58.
No, that's too much.
Luger and
I can't watch that.
We're not.
Okay.
There's no point. I've seen it.
No, I can't watch it.
I really haven't seen it.
I don't think. Why would you?
I mean, I watched this pay-per-view for like two things. I wanted to see Razor and Ted DiBiase and Bret and Doink, and then I watched the Steiners and Heavenly Bodies. So, I watched like the first half of this show, which if you'd have turned it off, it would have ended up being a pretty good show. The Lex Luger wins here by count out. They drop confetti from the ceiling. They celebrate as if.
Oh, shit.
You've heard of this.
Yes.
But you don't know it was here. So in front of 20. He missed it. In front of 24,000 people. Oh, my God. He's out. Nope. It's gone.
No,
who's
bro.
This guy? Oh, we got the Braves. Some excitement just happened. We had a triple.
We're going out.
About a tomahawk chopping this motherfucker. Anyway, yeah, so they drop confetti here. And he didn't really win the championship.
Yes.
Yes. So the guy you spent all this money, invested all this money in, you didn't put the title on him because Vince got cold feet, according to Bruce Pritchard, who worked side by side with him. Listen to something to wrestle with. It's awesome. With Bruce Pritchard. But he says that they got cold feet here. Now, these episodes are tough for me to listen to him talk about. Some of them I give a shit about. And the steroid trial episode was one of those that I liked. Okay, and that's the kind of stuff I think like a crime theorist or conspiracy theorist, that's what you'd like to hear. We're going to read you something really good later. But they didn't put the strap on Lex here, and they didn't anoint him because Vince just got cold feet. So all I want to do now is we can go and look at the house show numbers around. Let's skip ahead a couple months and go to like October, November. Tell me what like end of September, October maybe is looking like. Because, I mean, to me, I feel like if we're digging here, we want to kind of correlate where business is. And, oh, man, there you go. We're getting sidetracked. I don't get it.
October.
What we got
going on? 93, they did 1,500 in Amherst.
You don't have to go over every show. Just give us a couple of that's a small number. So
Pittsburgh Civic Center. Okay. 9,800.
That sounds
Yokozuna pretty pinned good. Undertaker in the main event.
Oh, okay. So that's I have heard this talked about.
Baltimore, 5,008. It's not awful.
Did they run the Baltimore Arena? Joe Louis. Did they run the Baltimore Arena? Is that the one they ran?
Yep.
Okay.
The Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. 1,700 people. That's pretty low.
So they were almost outdrawing WCW in the Baltimore Arena, the main event which wasn't their territory.
Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler in a steel cage match.
From when?
From October 28th, 1993.
I could actually see that being pretty good.
Yeah. And only 1,700 people saw it.
Well, that proves Bret and Jerry weren't
the draws. Joe Louis Arena is bigger than that, isn't it? Or maybe not. Who cares?
It really doesn't matter. So, I mean, any big dates before we move into Survivor Series in November? Just give us whatever looks
on great. 11/22/93, Jerry Lawler pleaded not guilty to statutory rape charges.
Oh, wow. I don't really know a lot about this story.
The sex charges stem from an incident involving a 13-year-old girl.
So, this is why – okay. So at Survivor Series, he's supposed to be facing Bret Hart's team, and which is going to be his brothers, Bruce, Keith, and Owen. And instead, Shawn Michaels has to fill in with a bunch of guys with masks on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so that makes sense.
11/23/93, Vince McMahon pleaded not guilty to charges of conspiracy to distribute anabolic steroids.
All right, well, I had read that in that other thing that he was charged in 93. Okay, so this happens at the end of 93. He's charged.
Trial date was set for May 2nd, 94.
Okay. Dr. Zahorian had been a doctor out of Hershey, Pennsylvania. We'll get into that story in a little bit. I know we keep bringing this up, but this really is why we made the transition from the Hulkster, the Macho Man. Ric Flair had left and gone back to WCW at this point in time after he'd been champion twice. He lost the strap to Bret. Bret had the belt at the end of 92. You know, all the shenanigans we went over at the end of the last episode. So moving into Survivor Series, first match, just real quick, go through this. The 1-2-3 Kid, Marty Jannetty, Randy Savage, and Razor Ramon.
What a team.
Who is now that is a pretty darn good team. They take on Atom Bomb, Diesel, IRS, and Rick Martel.
What a team.
Yeah. For not a reason. Team. That went 26-58.
Oh, boy.
But, I mean, there's a couple good workers in there. The Hart family, Bret, Bruce, Keith, and Owen with Stu in their corner.
Jesus.
Take on Shawn Michaels and his Knights. It's supposed to be Jerry Lawler and his Knights. This was the Black Knight, the Blue Knight, and the Red Knight.
Who
but
are these?
If I'm not mistaken, I know one of them was Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Oh, my God.
He was one of them. I don't know which one he was.
Hanging and banging.
Yep. Not at that point in time. He would have, because Brother Brutai wasn't around. I'm sure they still came into contact. Anyway, this match goes long as shit. 31 minutes. The Hart family wins, of course. I don't think – I think Owen got eliminated. And he was the only one eliminated from the Hart team. And they just ran through everybody else. And this is kind of sowing the seeds for what we got in 1994 already right here. It was long-term booking, and it worked. We're going to find out if it drew money away from pay-per-views. I wish we'd have done the research on some of the buy rates like we normally do. But that's not – you can go look those up on your own. I'm sure they're down. This was not a great time for the WWF. Monday Night Raw was humming along, and I think we briefly went over that at the end of the Hulkamania episode. But, you know, it was live for the first couple months, and then they went to the taped stuff. And I think they would I think they taped one or taped two for every one they did live or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, moving right along with the Survivor Series, the Bushwhackers and Men on a Mission. Mabel and Moe, if you didn't know. They got Oscar in their corner, and they defeat Bam Bam Bigelow, Bastion Booger, Jesus. And the Head Shrinkers with Alpha and Luna
that
Vachon.
That sounds terrible.
That match only went 11 minutes.
Good.
Yeah, that is probably exactly why. The main event of this show is the All-Americans. This is Lex Luger, the Steiner Brothers, and the Undertaker. They defeat the Foreign Fanatics, Crush.
Where's Crush from?
Hawaii. He's foreign. That knows the 50th state. Jacques Rougeau, Ludwig Borga, and Yokozuna.
The evil.
The evil foreigners with Jim Cornette, Johnny Polo, and Mr. Fuji in their corner. That match went 27-59 as the Cubbies continue to walk in runs. And so, Yokozuna is still your world heavyweight champion. At this point in time, the direction of the company seems to be kind of at a meh stage. You really don't really know. You don't know who's really being pushed and who's not. I mean, Shawn's the IC champ. He's humming along. Actually, no, he's not at this point in time. Because somewhere around this point, and this is good that I thought about this. He gets stripped of the title. He failed a drug test. So this is when they start implementing these because, as we'll get into later, fucking Hulk Hogan and
is this
guys like that, Hercules, weren't taking drug tests.
Is this the time when they said he had gotten that money?
Yes.
From a fan?
Allegedly, that is the story. Some people have said there was a lady fan, right? Wasn't it a lady?
I think so.
What the hell was Shawn doing? Some millionaire, yeah, that's just, some millionaire
like
did leave him some money.
$1.5 million something.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Millions? Really?
I think.
At the time, Shawn's probably making $300,000. This is what'll blow your mind. We've told you Ric Flair and guys like that and Jim Crockett back in the late 80s. Flair was knocking down $750.
It's hard to find the exact number because a lot of people don't talk about it.
About that story, I have heard it.
But I heard it was close to $1 million or something like that.
Well, that's a lot of damn
which
money
is ridiculous.
For him. That's probably 4 or 5.
And it may not even be true.
Well,
who
it's
knows?
Rumor and innuendo, nonetheless. It doesn't matter.
That's why he didn't care about failing the drug test.
Yeah, Shawn stripped of the IC title, and the story they gave was something about him, I think, not defending it within 30 days or some nonsense that they'd played on TV. He stripped of the title. They have a battle royal in October. We did skip over this. On an episode of Raw, and the winner of that battle royal the next week the last two guys in the battle royal would face one another the next week for the vacant Intercontinental title. That ended up being Razor Ramon, who was a new babyface, and he was a heel, played a great heel. I always liked Scott Hall, and Razor was coming into his own. They saw him as a star. He had that big look, but he's just a naturally jacked dude. Honestly, I'm sure he took. I'm sure he'd done gas before. I'm sure he had.
Because he was fat.
Yeah, but he's been a professional wrestler since the 80s. So
he was fat before then, and now he's ripped.
But he's a big old dude, man. Yeah. He really is. And probably, probably legit 6'5", 6'6".
Probably.
I mean, he's a big dude. And
Chico.
Yeah. He's coming into his own, and Vince is kind of pushing him. So he wins the IC title. Well, Shawn returns to television, I want to say, around December, maybe January, which is what we're about to get into, of 94. Well, December would have been in 93. I'm getting ahead of himself. He comes back on TV and claims he never lost the belt in the ring, so he's still walking around with his title. So there are two versions of the Intercontinental title. One of them's being defended. One of them's not. And that's going to take us into – what are you laughing at?
I'm talking shit to Tyler about his boy, Flaherty.
Oh, okay. Well, give us a rundown real quick. Go to – round, I guess, December, January 94, December of 93, January 94, and give us, what are they doing house show-wise? With Yoko on top, who's he running with? Or is he even on top?
Their last show of 93 drew 2,500, which it says a sellout. Bret Hart and IRS
that was the main?
Yeah.
So Bret's basically main evented for
WWF,
like the last
Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. There is no number, but Bret Hart and Shawn in a steel cage was the main.
Well, that probably was pretty
good. So they're running about 2,500, 3,000.
That's way down.
Yeah. Well, so here's one at Rosemont Horizon, December 28th.
Okay.
7,600.
Okay. Well, that's still down. I would maybe not for a house show. I don't really.
That's a big arena, though.
Yeah, it is. That would not look very good. I mean, but it's a house show, so there's no cameras.
That's where they run there. Yeah.
Oh, well, we're going to go into the Royal Rumble of 94. This is the first Royal Rumble where
they ran an agricultural hall January 1st, 94.
I went to a house show.
2,500.
In
Florence.
January of 94 in Florence at the Civic Center. And that building, I think, had been open for about probably maybe 8-9 months at the time. If it had been that long, it had been open. And my buddy Greg took and his dad, we went to WWF. show that ended up having a wrestling challenge taping, I believe, because Brett and Sean wrestled at that show, and I told you earlier it was like 5 or 6 minutes.
7 minutes.
7 minutes, 42 seconds. All right, so they taped that for TV, and we got a schmoz finish when Diesel interfered, I believe, right? Or did Brett end up losing that match?
Diesel attacked Brett.
Oh, okay, yeah. So we had a smosh finish there. But that show, I remember, that was I don't know if they list it there, but I'm pretty sure the Steiners wrestled the Head Shrinkers.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm right.
I'm sorry. Marty Jannetty and the 1-2-3 Kid defeated the Head Shrinker.
Well, Steiners might have wrestled.
The Steiners wrestled Brett Nowen.
Oh.
25 minutes.
Dude, damn. I'm not even. Wait a minute. And that you're saying that's on Wrestling Challenge. Is that what you're reading? That match is. I did not see that match long.
That's live. Under this.
I think that's incorrect.
It could be. It very well could be. Wrestling is a weird thing.
It is, and I think that is. I think I would remember that because I think that's the match that ended up being on the Coliseum video that people ran and rave about. I mean, like, I think Meltzer gave it like 4.5 or something like that. So yeah. I could see that being really good. And let's go into Royal Rumble. They come to that Providence Civic Center in Rhode Island. January 22nd, 94, 14,500 in attendance. 14,500. That sounds decent. I would assume that's close to a sellout if it's not one. This guy, you know, don't you blow this. Jesus Christ. Opening match. Well, we had a dark match. Let's talk about that. That was Brooklyn Brawler defeated Jim Powers. And the time I have here is unknown. I just wanted to say that. Tatanka defeats Bam Bam Bigelow in a singles match. Can't see that being really good, but it's probably not awful. The Quebecers, Jacques and Pierre, with Johnny Polo, defeat Brett and Owen Hart. Now, this is a match where the Quebecers are defending the tag team titles.
Johnny Polo.
That is Raven.
Raven.
That's right.
If you want to listen to Scott a Letton. Weird, good podcast, The Raven Effect.
I've always heard he's like almost genius level IQ.
He is smart.
He's really smart. He retains knowledge. He remembers stuff.
Him and Billy Corgan argued about Roman Reigns this week. It was great.
You text me that, and I need to go back and listen to that. That sounds
his
interesting.
Podcast
Billy
is
Corgan's
funny,
kind
though.
Of a weird guy. But
who?
Billy Corgan.
So is Raven.
I'm well aware of Scott Levy's whatever. So, yeah, this match was a lot of angle. Owen was mad. Brett couldn't make the tag. Brett was hurt, and then his knee was hurt. He sold it throughout the match. It's really good psychology, man. It really is. Go back and watch this. The Quebecers are not bad. I remember them being the heel tag team, and from my childhood, they were really pushed. So I will say this. Owen kicks the leg out of his leg, as he says in his post-match interview. I kicked your leg out of your leg. It was bad. His brush with Stardom, his first big promos weren't that great. But this is the time where Owen starts.
What was he trying to say? I kicked your leg
from up under you, probably. And I said, I kicked the leg out of your leg. And it's not a good promo, post-match promo. But he turns on Brett here, and Owen comes into his own. I always liked Owen. What are your thoughts about him real quick? I mean, I liked Owen Hart.
I hadn't seen a lot of his stuff.
It's really good. We're gonna do an Owen and Davey watch along that I know you haven't seen, and I think it's fantastic. I think it's probably
the match from Raw?
Yes.
I have seen
it. Oh, you have seen
it? You showed it to me.
Did I really?
Yeah.
When?
I don't know.
I don't think I did.
You'd have.
That's one of the top five matches that's ever been on Raw, in my opinion.
Yeah, you showed me.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a damn good
one. But I hadn't seen a lot of his stuff. But from what other people say, he was good. I mean, like Sean and all them rave about how good he was.
If Sean and
Jericho,
if they're putting you over, you got to.
I mean,
good.
Jericho said he was one of his favorites.
They do put Roman over, which we've been
Sean,
off of that.
Sean's never really put Roman.
We've been off of that train for a long time. That's a good thing. Well, I'm gonna move along. Razor Ramon defends the Intercontinental title against Erwin R. Schyster. Sean had some shenanigans here at ringside. I don't really remember what happened, but he beats him. Yokozuna
Boo.
With Jim Cornette defeats The Undertaker in a casket match.
My God.
For the World Heavyweight title.
Pretty
Yoko's
sure I've seen
defending
this
here.
Match.
I actually have never watched it, so therefore we are going to do this on the watch along because I've heard it's silly. There's a lot of run-ins and whatnot. I've avoided this match for so long because they wrestled in a casket match at the house show I mentioned I went to earlier.
Yeah.
And it was a smosh, dumbass finish where it was. I felt cheated and I felt like it was fake. You know, at the time, it really it soured me on the WWF for a minute because I didn't know at the time the magic was broken. I didn't know they practiced the pay-per-view matches before they did them. I knew it was a work, but I didn't know how it was a work, if that makes sense. I didn't know how they did it. This kind of started to show me how they did it. The main event here at the Royal Rumble. This is ball game. So, go Bravos, chop on. Bret Hart and Lex Luger co-win the Royal Rumble here.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Now, I've seen the finish of this match, and I've seen some of this match. I can tell you this. It was not good. Bret and Lex had some drama there at the end. They both go over the top rope. Bret clearly landed second. The replay showed that. Vince later on regretted the decision big time for having both of them win. But at the time, he was so wishy-washy on Lex Luger. His plan for not putting him over back at SummerSlam 93 in August was that he was going to put him over on the grandest stage of them all at WrestleMania 10, which was going to come from Madison Square Garden. Now, he gets cold feet again and says, let's co-win it and let's see what the fans do. So I think they did like a fan vote as to who they wanted to see get the title shot. And what they ended up doing was President Jack Tunney comes out on television and says both of them are going to get the shot and they're going to flip a coin to see who gets it first. Now, the other person has to take on someone of I forget exactly how they said it, but it was like equal competition or suitable competition, how they did it. And they were going to go ahead at WrestleMania 10 from the Garden, the Mecca of all sport. And they were going to main event WrestleMania 10. So, Taylor, after the Royal Rumble, what are we looking like on the house shows?
I am gloating on Facebook right now.
Yeah, you're just not.
January 23rd in Bristol, Connecticut, they drew 900 people.
Business is bad right now.
The Spectrum.
Now, hold on. Let's preface that. What we're going to get into later, this plays a big part in why business is doing what it is. At this time, I do want to go ahead and I want to throw this out there.
The Spectrum in Philadelphia, they drew 5,000.
That's still low. I mean, that's got to be – the Spectrum's got to be a 20,000 seat.
Golden Dome in Pennsylvania, 800. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is not
Boston sounding. Garden, 4,500.
That's – bad for Boston.
Nassau Coliseum, 7,500.
Okay.
That's better. But that's also their stronghold.
That's also Long Island.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty low everywhere else.
All right. So,
heavily papered.
So now we're moving towards WrestleMania 10, and the major storylines are Bret and Luger are going to both get a title shot. Owen wants a match with Bret at WrestleMania 10. And Shawn Michaels is claiming to still be the Intercontinental Champion, even though he's not. And he's going to take on Razor Ramon in a ladder match, an iconic ladder match. And other than that, you have a feud. I think Savage and Crush began their feud back at the Rumble or somewhere along in there where they were, you know, they had had a falling out. They had once been friends, and it might have happened months before that. I really can't remember. And they were going to have a match. So, who was headlining those shows, if you don't mind telling me real quick? So I mean, just so I can wrap my head around.
Lex Luger defeated Crush at that big one at Nassau Coliseum. Mm.
What else was on that card? Do you see anything else on there?
Wow.
I mean, what would Rick draw Steiner that there?
And I Randy guess. Savage defeated Yokozuna and Quang.
All right.
Lex Luger and Tatanka defeated Yokozuna and Quang in the Boston Garden. Pittsburgh, that's a charity show. Nobody cares about that. Razor Ramon pinned Shawn Michaels at around 17 minutes. That was the one at the Golden Dome in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So there's some pretty shitty. These are back when they're running the A and B shows.
Yes.
Like they're running shows same night.
Yeah.
So I guess the show you'd want to be on is the one that's got Razor and Shawn main eventing, not Quang and Yokozuna.
I don't know.
It
depends on what kind of wrestling fan you are, I guess. I mean,
I don't think it does.
People that like that kind of shit.
So you would want to go see Lex Luger and Tatanka?
No, I'm saying it depends on what type of fan you are. Of course, as a kid. All right, so I can tell you this right now. My two favorite wrestlers in 1994, bar none, were Razor Ramon and Ric Flair. And that was it. That's my two favorite wrestlers. Bret was behind them.
Who is Quang?
Quang is, if I'm not mistaken, is Rikishi.
I think so, yeah.
I think it's Rikishi.
Wow.
Oh, whoa. That's Savio Vega.
Oh, even better.
I think it might. Yeah, that's Savio Vega.
Well, at least he could work.
Savio could work.
Yeah.
But whatever. We're going to move into WrestleMania 10, which came to you from the Garden. I have been fortunate enough to attend a basketball game there, but I have not seen a wrestling show there, which I do want to do one day in my life if they ever run anything besides Raw from
That's
there.
That's all you're going
to
see there.
You don't think they ever run a pay-per-view there again? They've got to. A pay-per-view.
I don't know, man.
A small pay-per-view? You don't think they'd run a Money in the Bank or something there?
I don't know.
Whatever. It's the greatest arena I've ever
been
in.
When is this WrestleMania?
What? This is March 20th, 1994.
2/23/94.
Oh, we got an update on the steroid?
No.
Oh, no?
On Jerry. Oh. His criminal charges of 4 counts of statutory rape and sodomy were dropped in exchange for him pleading guilty to harassing a witness. He got off pretty easy there.
Jerry, I believe, is a perv. He had a stroke.
Yeah, I don't believe
it. He had a stroke, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
Having sex?
Yeah.
With a, what, 35-year-old woman, 40-year-old
yeah,
woman?
Yeah, he didn't say that She's on hot. JR's podcast. He
didn't talk about it.
He didn't say when how it happened. K-fabe. He just said when it happened.
Kayfabe, baby.
Said, I went and looked in the mirror, and my face was drooping.
I looked like you, JR. No, come didn't on, say man. That. I hope he did.
And JR would have slapped him.
I wish he would have. Somebody should slap that damn, oh, man. Puppies! Whatever. All right, we're going to move into WrestleMania 10. So, we had a dark match, the Heavenly Bodies, Gigolo, Jimmy Del Rey, and Dr. Tom Pritchard defeat the Bushwhackers. And that's a whatever. The opening match, considered one of the best openers of all time, opener of all time, is Owen and Bret. They have I think modern fans would have a little bit of a problem getting into this match. I don't think you would. I think you would dig it. I think this ain't the best match of the night. This is definitely the second best match of the night, and it is close. It is close. One thing that will be on this watch along that we're going to do, not on this one, but on the next one, I guess, because we're going to do it by years, is going to be a Shawn and Razor ladder match, but not the one from WrestleMania 10, because we've both seen it multiple times. I've only seen the other one, I think, like once or twice maybe. So we will throw that out there. Owen and Bret had a hell of an opener here. They went 20 minutes. It was back and forth. It was – Bret said, I think one time – I think in his book he says that, this was like something he'd had in his mind. You know what I mean? Like planned out. If we ever did it, you know, he had a map of what he wanted to do, and it made it easier to do it, and he knew how good Owen was, and he wanted to show Vince and everybody else how good Owen was. So it really is, as Bret would say, a beautiful match. It's good. It's a classic. Now the next match is not a classic. This is Bam Bam and Luna defeat Dink and Doink. Not good. The next match has a lot of action, and it's a hot feud. This is kind of the blow off. Randy Savage defeats Crush in a Falls Count Anywhere match, but this is a WWF style. Excuse me, fall count anywhere match where I think you have to get the fall and then you have to go to the ring or something like that. It's very strange. Alundra Blaze defends the women's championship against Leilani Kai in a short match. Men on a Mission defeat the Quebecers by count out, so they don't win the tag titles there. That's more garbage. Yoko faces Lex Luger and defends his world title against Lex Luger here. He's got Jim Cornette and Mr. Fuji in his corner. They have a long match. Mr. Perfect is a special guest referee. They're playing off a beef that Perfect had with Luger from going back to 93. Pretty insignificant feud. They had wrestled at WrestleMania and just kind of had – they just didn't like each other. So Perfect kind of costs Lex the match here. It is what it is. Luger fails again on the grand stage. Does not win the title. He's not the anointed one after all. Earthquake. Yes, John Tenta defeats Adam Bomb in 35 seconds.
Oh,
why did this even have to happen? I'm guessing they were trying to work something out with John here, and they ended up not, because he ended up in WCW like 6 months later or so. Anyway, Razor Ramon and Shawn have what we didn't put it in our top five, and I think we mentioned this was what, maybe 6 or 7. Yeah. It's up there. It's a hell of a match. This is the first mainstream ladder match in the WWF. It's worked perfectly. Flair and them have discounted Scott Hall over the years and said Sean had a match with the ladder. Scott Hall just happened to be there. That's horse shit. This is two guys who are buddies. We haven't mentioned this yet. There is a group called Click.
The greatest group of all time.
It is, because it's some guys that they might have been dick faces outside of the ring.
They know and
but
love
they love
the
business,
the rest
and
of
they
the
rode
business.
Around together. And this would have been Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Shawn Waltman, and Shawn Michaels at this point in time. And I think
and a young Paul Levesque.
He was not here. He was not here yet. But Jeff Jarrett ran with him.
He was like a little side.
He was a tag along.
Side
he was
guy.
A tag along, but yeah. He wasn't in the Click, but he ran with him because he and Sean were buddies.
Yeah.
And
I think they all liked him.
I would think so. Yeah. I don't think Jeff. I don't see them. Yeah.
I don't see how you couldn't like Jeff Jarrett.
He's not a dick.
No.
I mean, it really is crazy that.
So many people had him.
Yeah.
And talk shit about him. He's just.
I've always liked
him.
He's
just a corny.
Ain't he great? He is a damn corny.
The corny of all corny.
But he's damn good corny. I like him. Razor and Sean have a great match here. I mean, God damn it. Bruce says on the thing that Owen and Brett went long and Razor and Sean went long, so they had to cut some off the main event and whatnot. Who gives a damn?
10 minutes.
In the main?
Is long enough.
For Yoko and Brett?
Yes.
Not to Brett, it's not, but I don't think he minded on this night because he knew he was going to be anointed. But Razor does win the IC title here. He is the undisputed champion after defeating Sean in the ladder match. We're going to move into the main event real quick. Brett defeats Yokozuna. This is he wins. This is a better match than WrestleMania 9, but then when I go back and watch it, everybody rates it higher. 9 to me, I've watched both. I'm a Brett mark. His work. I don't like him as a guy, I don't think, anymore, really.
Well, something you said earlier, I think that's the difference, one of the bigger difference between him and Sean, because they're always compared, and they're always going to be compared.
They ran side by side.
Is that I think Sean matches hold up better through time than Brett. A lot of Brett's matches are old school.
I don't think Sean ever had better matches with Yoko than Brett did.
I didn't say that.
Oh.
Said they hold up better in time.
I think that it depends
If I show somebody this ladder match and then I show them that Brett and Owen match.
That's what I said earlier.
Yeah.
I think a lot of new school fans
that's
would
what I'm
prefer
saying.
The ladder match.
I think Sean's matches.
I prefer the ladder match as a work.
I think
but
they
I
hold
also,
up better because they're more entertainment.
They are more entertainment.
Like you said
like
earlier.
If we're watching along or something, yeah. I
and
think
Brett's
we're more people.
More technical.
He is.
Yes.
He's technically smooth. He's fluid. Sean has an ability, a more athletic ability, and he has an innate ability about him to go above and beyond in a match and dig down and get something different out of it. It seems to me that if Brett says he listens to the crowd, and one thing he's wrong about is he said Flair had
no psychology.
That's absolute
horseshit. In his book, he said something like 30 minutes of no psychology when he had to wrestle Flair.
That's horseshit.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Flair had a Flair match, but so did Brett. And Sean has a Sean match. Yeah. The difference, I would say, is Sean could probably work with more people than either one of them. Closer to Flair than Brett would be closer to Flair, I should say, because Flair wrestled everybody. But if you go back, do Flair matches hold up? Yeah, they do, because you're liking seeing Ric Flair and what he does.
But he is entertaining.
He's entertaining.
He's a shitheel.
Brett makes it seem like a fight, but I can understand, and we're getting way off on, but these are the two main guys in the company. We're going to talk about them a lot in the next several episodes.
We don't have that much further to go.
We don't. We really don't. But I mean, I'm just saying that I'm talking about in the future episodes. I mean, these are the two guys here, man. I mean, this is Savage and Hogan for the new generation. This is what they are. This is what they need to be, and that's what Vince is thinking. So we got off on a tangent there. It doesn't matter. He and I do not differ, no matter what it seems like. Taylor seems to think that I don't think Shawn Michaels is the best ever. And it really
I'm just
pisses
making
me off.
Sure you
Brett
do.
Wins the strap here, and this was an apology at WrestleMania 10 from Vince McMahon for taking the belt off of him a year before. Obviously, we just read it out. Brett's headlining the goddamn house shows. He's not drawing big money, but he's what they've got, and he's making money, and it's not a lot.
Stop at 94?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about something I've been thinking about.
Get right ahead.
You want to do it now?
About the...
This is about Lex Luger.
Go ahead.
Was he not one of the shittiest book people?
I would think so.
I mean, it seems like they missed big on him.
Did they miss big? I mean, did Crockett not miss big with him?
Did WCW not miss big throughout his whole career?
That's what the,
he's been booked like shit.
It's like they never, to me, they never pulled the trigger on him. Everybody wanted to push him like hell as like a secondary guy.
Because as much as I hate him, I don't hate him. He sucked.
The crowd was hot for
him. They liked him.
They did. Look, I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. When he fucking puts the torture rack on Hogan in 97 on Nitro, that place explodes.
Yeah.
It was the right time. Anybody can talk shit, and that's another episode altogether.
You just look back at wrestling, and there's so many people that were booked wrong. And it just...
Well, you say it's so many people. It's really only a handful of guys.
Well, there is only a handful of guys, but that's a lot. Because you don't really have a chance
to make...
You don't
know that you wouldn't... You don't know that if you didn't put the fucking belt on him at SummerSlam, that you'd draw better numbers the rest of the year.
But
Brett was going to get his eventually. I see exactly what you're saying. Yeah. I make the same argument. I've talked... I think it was the last episode or maybe the one before where I said my whole idea behind doing this podcast was I wanted to do like a rebooking at some point. And yeah, this is something I've thought about thoroughly. What I would do with Lex Luger in 93. Because to me, Crockett shit the bed with him, but they still had Flair. They still had Sting. They still had those guys. At this point in time, Hogan is gone. Savage is not wrestling because Vince does not want him wrestling. He wants to present the newer guys, the fresher faces. He wants to appeal to a younger, hipper crowd. He thinks WCW is going, cartoony. The family is going to definitely compete with him. I think he's feeling the heat here. And instead of him just embracing the fact in 1993-94 that he had Bret and Shawn that could go and just letting him go out there and have badass matches all the time, he did let that happen, but not as much as he should have. You could have easily run Bret on or Luger on top, let Bret drop back down, elevate Shawn up through a series of matches there or something. Yeah, there's so many things you could do. I totally agree. And we got off on that, but you hit the nail on the head right there. Luger was booked like a moron, like a geek. But they tell you he's a top guy, and then the next week he's not a top guy.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. I totally agree with that. So where do we go house show-wise? Just real quick, just look at some stuff, scroll through, like maybe April and May, and we'll move into June, and that's going to be King of the Ring. And this is at Baltimore Arena. This is in WCW's backyard.
Syracuse for a wrestling challenge taping. April 12th, 7,500.
That sounds all right.
Rochester War Memorial Auditorium, 6,000. Superstars taping. 4/13/94, Jesse Ventura was awarded $809,000 in video royalties.
Coliseum lawsuit. Yeah.
And $8,625 in merchandise from Road. That is a lot.
He was on the shit list for a while.
Yeah, I would imagine
sir. They edited him out of tapes back then. Do you know what they did? Do you know what they did on those tapes? I have a couple of them still in my possession. Sweet Stan Lane was on commentary.
Just over him?
They would do another taping with him and Gorilla over the old stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, on several of the old home tapes. And I have a couple of them in my possession.
Richfield, Ohio, Coliseum, 6,000. Brett and Owen headline. And then you have this
in
Ontario, April 23rd, same night. I guess it's the other show.
Okay.
Mabel and Yokozuna.
So in Ontario, they run – where was Brett Owen?
That was in Richfield, Ohio.
So they run the Ohio show, and they go run –
1,800 people.
So in Toronto, they ran Mabel.
Mabel and Yokozuna.
Why would you not flip-flop that?
I don't know.
You know why? You know who's not there running things right now? Vince McMahon. You know who is?
Jerry.
Pat. No. And we can get into that for 1 second. Pat and Bruce and JR.
I don't know. I guess, you know, they have these things planned out already where they're going. Right?
Why would you not run the Owen Brett match in Toronto? Did you say it was Toronto or where was it at?
Yeah, Ontario. They're still in Canada.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like the A show was running a bigger building probably. So they're going to have
Richfield was they used it for pay-per-views, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to have a better show.
Okay, well, I kind of get that, show, but and, I mean, I'm just saying. You know,
yeah,
you
it was not
Canada
good.
Sons. Jesus, I just don't know if that's the smartest book and whatever. So, the rumor around this time is that if Vince is convicted, he's on. When's his trial? When did the trial start? Wasn't it May?
May, it's May 4th, I think, okay. is when it was going to start.
So
May
we're about,
2nd.
We're going to go ahead and talk about this then.
They canceled a show in May for a poor advance.
All right.
That's
before
bad.
We go into King of the Ring, let's go ahead and bring up the elephant in the room, what we've been hinting at the whole time. I've pulled up a Vice Sports article about this.
I have another little tidbit here.
Go ahead.
429.94. I think I heard Bruce talk about this. Charles Austin was awarded
the 20, was it 20 something?
$26 million for almost being
taking the rocker dropper
almost
from
being paralyzed.
So he wasn't?
It says
no, that's trash. I'm pretty sure he's paralyzed.
Stemming from being nearly paralyzed from a rocker dropper.
Well,
for $26 million.
Bruce argues that he could take
it. Paralyzed.
But Bruce argues
it's a flat face bump.
Yeah, he could take it, and that guy couldn't.
It's a flat bump. You fall flat. I mean, I've never taken a bump.
You go right to your belly, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say I know what I'm talking about, but.
But you kind of do.
Yeah, it's a flat face bump.
Well, yeah, this is like maybe a couple years or a few years after that McDonald's lawsuit, too. I remember this was major headlines. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't even think to talk about it, honestly. Yeah, he won
$26 million.
Yeah, well, I'm sure his lawyer got a fat chunk
of
that. Let's go into the steroid trial now, I guess, because I think is it over by King of the Ring? That's in June 19th. Is it over? I don't really know.
I don't see any little tidbits on here
Let's
about it.
Let's just go into what's going on in the WWF at the time. Vince is basically this article paints him as a mafia don who's kind of dictating orders down to his capos, his underbosses. If you've ever watched Sopranos or Godfather or anything like that, which is great, but this is just not whatever. Dr. George Sahorian of Hershey, Pennsylvania, he was a urologist. He was getting pills and steroids for the wrestlers, allegedly. At this point in time, he had been, you said he was, I think he was indicted in 91 or 92. I'm not going to go through all of this, but basically, this article was written on the 21st anniversary, so a couple years ago, a few years ago. All right, so Dr. George Sahorian, the urologist from Hershey, was charged around 91 or 92 with distributing drugs. Roddy Piper, later in his book, he would talk about how this was kind of like a vacation spot for the boys back in the day. There were several people that came out. I'm not going to go over all of them and said that Vince basically helped distribute steroids. Obviously, the pro wrestling business, mixed martial arts, any professional sport, but especially a sport that emphasizes your appearance is going to be scrutinized for steroid abuse or hormone abuse of any stripe. And you know the old cartoon style guys of the 80s, they were on the shit. I mean, you just don't look the way they look without hours and hours a day in the gym. And these guys don't have that kind of time. They're traveling, they're wrestling at night. They don't have 8 to 10 hours a day to put in working out. No. So they got to take shortcuts. It's a body business, man. It's an upper body business. Like Rick Rude said, he can cover up the legs, man, with a long tie. It's an upper body business. And he was just jacked to the gills. There's no doubt guys like that, you know, took shortcuts. I don't fault them. You know, steroids, I want to say, were made illegal in the United States somewhere in the late 80s, early, right around 90 or something like that. And
speaking of steroids.
Yeah. Zack Ryder, yeah, he's
wow.
Anyway, this article goes on to just paint America as awful, and the WWF as the villain here, and it is, and all Vince is doing is, you know, helping his business. That's all he's doing. From 84 to 89, Sahorian, the doctor, had first come into contact with WWF as a state appointed ringside physician for live wrestling matches in Pennsylvania. and this is according to the Vice article, he supplied loyal patients such as Hulk Hogan, Piper, Moondog Rex, Ultimate Warrior, and Vince McMahon himself.
Moondog Rex.
Why was he even worrying about?
I want to just say, he's not putting this fucking needle in their ass.
He's not.
They're doing it.
Yeah, they're going to get it whether Vince helps them get it or not.
He's not.
And Vince wants it.
He's not. He's on it.
Yeah, obviously. They're, look at him.
He's not a damn
criminal. Why does this need to be a trial? Why does this? Why does the FBI, why do they have to get involved? Why does the attorney's office have to get involved?
If it's a fake sport.
Yeah.
And
we didn't mention this. Well, I think we have in a previous one. Vince came out in the public and said this is entertainment.
Yes. Why does it matter what they're doing?
Well, because they're illegal. It's illegal to traffic. Why are they illegal? It's illegal to traffic them. You have to be prescribed by a doctor, which Zahorian is.
But why are they illegal?
Man, I mean, it's killing people.
Well,
so but does, I get where you're going with
so
it.
So does pain pills.
Exactly. Prescribed every day.
Yeah.
So does Adderall. Is going to kill
millions
in this generation. I mean, millions of people your age and my age are going to die of enlarged hearts because they took Adderall for 20 fucking years because they couldn't, quote unquote, focus in high school. So they couldn't sit still.
They couldn't
still.
Stay up and drink all night.
Right.
They just take them for fun.
Absolutely. And they're just it's going to kill them early. Yeah. They're going to die of enlarged hearts. I mean, I'm not going to live a long life. I smoke cigarettes. I do some bad stuff. I'm not one to pass judgment. That's why we're saying, who gives a shit whether people take steroids or not?
I mean, it's not affecting.
If it's not picking your pocket or breaking your leg, what do you give a fuck?
Or affecting a sporting event.
It's making the government more money.
Yeah.
Vince makes more money when guys look good.
So, but I'm just, anyway.
That is what it is. We're just going over this is where the WWF is. Vince is in trouble. He's showing up in public with a fucking
neck brace on.
He's got Linda by his side. He's trying to present himself. He's in these big suits because he don't want you to know how jacked up he is. And we saw later on how big Mr. McMahon is, as big a guy as there's ever been in pro wrestling. Yeah, he's jacked. Anyway, Zahorian allegedly sold steroids and drugs to 43 professional wrestlers, 37 of whom were employed by McMahon's WWF when they made deliveries to Stanford to wrestlers' houses, allegedly, in this article. According to this, the regulation of steroids was tightened in 1988, and trafficking had become criminalized. There you go. And federal prosecutor Theodore Smith began investigating Zahorian, who, unknown to his WWF clients, and I'm quoting directly here, had also begun selling drugs to amateur bodybuilders and athletes. And after hinting that he had connections with the wrestling world, and he just had the misfortune to sell $650 of whatever to an ex-power lifter named William Dunn, a confidential informant for the fucking FBI. What do you know, Dr. George? Well, yes, he had been caught on tape bragging that he was giving Dunn better prices than the wrestlers. Zahorian was indicted in 91. There you go. Not 92. Earlier. It was 91. So this took a long time for Vince to be brought up in these charges and listed as an accomplice or in some sort of a conspiracy, because that's what this is. When more than one person decides to commit a crime, it's considered a conspiracy to commit crime. So here you go. Zahorian was convicted at trial on 15 charges of trafficking drugs, and that was his turn to cooperate with them. And I've never liked this. People talk about snitches. Here's the thing. You're not a snitch if you see a violent crime happening and you tell the cops what you saw, I don't think. You are a snitch if you get caught with drugs and then you go and turn people in who you were doing drugs with or had. Yes. Now you're a bitch. I mean, you're a nothing. Just to cut your little sentence down, here he goes. And by the way, he practices urology today.
Good.
Yeah, good for him. Whatever. So the WWF had been unable to keep four of the wrestlers from testifying at Zahorian's trial. So Hogan had to testify as to the receipt of steroids. And to bolster Zahorian's testimony here. So you got Hogan here. Patterson and Linda were warned ahead of time, according to the testimony of former Booker Anita Scales. So this is Pat and Linda, his, you know, very close to Vince. They had been warned of his sales and told to continue booking the Doctor for Pennsylvania shows so that, Patterson's words, the wrestlers can get their candy. But again, who really cares? There was circumstantial evidence for a criminal conspiracy in which Vince McMahon oversaw the parceling of drugs by underlings to underlings for the purpose of supersizing his employees, I'm quoting directly again, to enact his dream of uncommonly violent sports television.
What?
Whatever. And yet the case rapidly fell apart, with the two most serious charges that McMahon faced were dismissed due to sloppy procedural errors, which is a good thing. Hogan's testimony drew the most press to the trial, but it was cheap heat. He, quoting directly again, blandly stating that he only used steroids to recover from injuries, being on the road and whatnot over the years. I'm sure, Hulk. Hogan said nothing to implicate McMahon at all. Only one wrestler, Kevin Nails Wacholtz, testified that McMahon personally pressured him to take steroids. I'm sure he did, you liar. The man had old McDevitt there as a trusted sidekick.
Man has made
my God
a fortune.
Yes, he has, and he is. He's. I'm sure he's still there if he's alive.
Oh yeah.
And on the remaining counts sent to the jury, McMahon was acquitted of all charges. Now, here's the thing: whether you have to believe that all this shit was true, but again, we're saying we don't care. But at this point in time, Vince is kind of searching for, hey, I might go to the big house and I need somebody to run my car.
I mean, since we've gone off on all these other tangents.
You might as well.
Nails wanted more money at one time. Was this around this time or before that?
I would say that was probably 92, 93 okay. maybe at the latest, 93.
He threatened McMahon in his office.
You got an altercation, right?
Yes. They said that different accounts came from it. Bruce and all, I think they talked about it on one of Bruce's shows. Said he walked in and Nails was standing over Vince or something on the ground. Nails claimed after this that he was sexually assaulted by Vince McMahon.
This guy sounds like a punk ass.
Yeah.
He just wants a payday.
Exactly.
He can, you know what? You know what he can do.
Sexual assault. You are a grown ass man.
Who could probably whip the shit out of Vince McMahon.
No matter how big Vince was.
He can't really fight.
Yeah.
I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think he can. What the hell ever. We wanted to go over the trial because it's huge. You made valid points, man. I mean, bottom line is, wrestling has always, probably since the 60s, been a steroid business. There's no damn way. Nature Boy Buddy Rogers.
Bruno wasn't on steroids.
Well, Bruno was adamant against them.
Oh, yeah.
And he hated Vince McMahon at this point in time. So he would have loved to see Vince go to jail. Whatever, we're going to move along from that. That actually, Vince was acquitted. It was a big deal. And I remember thinking back when I was a kid, I was like, holy shit. Like, that outed him as the owner of the company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that broke another wall for me. Like, there's no damn internet's not prevalent at that point in time. I didn't have internet, but some people did in 94. And I didn't.
I was 2 years old.
I like how you keep bringing that shit up. We're going to move to King of the Ring, which took place on June 19th, 94. Like we were just talking about, Vince at this point in time would have had Pat or somebody else book, and I don't know exactly who, because he didn't know who to put in charge of his company at the time in case he goes to the big house.
Jerry Jarrett was going to take over.
That was rumored, and Bruce has falsely denied it. And we don't have to address the rumors and whatnot, but Cornette said that Jerry Jarrett could possibly have taken over, and that Bruce, you know, shitting all over Jerry, which he does. That's from a personal animosity, and it has every right to feel
and
that
also
way.
From entertainment.
Mm, absolutely. And I don't care. It doesn't matter. Somebody else was going to have to run the company if Vince went to jail. It wasn't going to be Linda at that point in time, I don't believe. I mean, she would have probably run the
she'd have ran it. The financials.
Yeah, the corporate side of it, absolutely. But from a booking standpoint, it wouldn't have been Vince anymore. And this is back, and I don't know if we've hit on this really, where it was him and two or three guys sitting around his pool, you know, drinking drinks and booking pro wrestling. And I think that, you know, they had better ideas back then. They just didn't always have the top guys, but they had good ideas. They had some really bad ideas too. This show's King of the Ring comes to you from the Baltimore Arena, WCW's backyard. Of course, WWF can do well here too, but this was closely aligned with the Great American Bash and a lot of big NWA and WCW moments. Well, I always liked the concept of the King of the Ring. The first two, to me, were good. I think 95 was, as they say in the business, the drizzling shits. And 96 redeemed itself. And 96 and 97 ended up, and 98 ended up being really good shows.
I don't think I've ever seen these.
Well, we're going to go here. Opening match, Razor Ramon defeats Bam Bam Bigelow in a King of the Ring quarterfinal match. Again, the reason I like these, you get matchups you weren't necessarily always seeing on TV, but they would put some guys together that had maybe feuded or something. And the first King of the Ring, Bret always put himself over back in 93. He had three different – we talked about this before, but he had three different good matches with different style of workers and wrestled a different style of match, and it really is true. So here's Razor, who's the big baby face right now, the up-and-comer, the big guy, the bad guy. He defeats Bam Bam. The next King of the Ring quarterfinal match, IRS defeats Mabel. Mm. Owen Hart defeats Tatanka in another quarterfinal match. Mm. The 1-2-3 Kid defeats Double J, Jeff Jarrett, in the other quarterfinal match. Now we get to Diesel, who's the Intercontinental Champion. He won the title from Razor Ramon in a house show back in April, or yeah, I think it was a house show or something like that. They might have taped it for TV. I'm not quite sure. He defeats Bret Hart by DQ when Jim Neidhart does a run-in. Bret has been feuding with Owen since on the house show circuit. Not drawing extremely well, but they ran that for a while anyway because that was what their big plans were, you know, just put it on cruise control. But here they kind of take a shot in the dark. I don't really know who booked this, but it was Diesel challenging for the World Heavyweight title. And as I said, Jim Neidhart runs in, and Bret loses by DQ but retains the title. Long match. It's actually pretty good. Those guys always work well together. Razor Ramon in a semifinal match defeats IRS. They had an ongoing feud for several months. Razor at this point in time, like I said, had lost the Intercontinental title to Diesel. The next semifinal match, Owen Hart defeats the 1-2-3 Kid. Now, this match is 3 minutes and 37 seconds long, and it is an action-packed 3 minutes and 37 seconds. I can't rate a match like that high. I think Scott Keith gives this like 4 stars.
That's ridiculous.
Or 3.5, something like that. But he just says it was so far ahead of his time that he was pissed. And I think this time might be wrong. I want to say this match might have actually been like 6 or 7 minutes.
Yes, the one I'm reading says 3 minutes, 30 seconds.
Okay, so that might be the real time. That is super short. I've watched this a long time ago. Next match, the Head Shrinkers. They're the tag team champions. They defend against Crush and Yokozuna, and they retain. Owen Hart defeats Razor Ramon in the King of the Ring final. This match is not long either, but it's not bad. I think at this point in time, this was a really rushed show. And your main event is actually Piper and Lawler. They had done this feud where Piper brought back the Piper's Pit segment or something to counteract the King's Court, which Jerry was doing and being pushed. And he brought this little scrawny guy out there. They set up a feud. This match was garbage. I did really like this show, though. I really did. As a kid, I really enjoyed this show. So what are we drawing at this point in time with Owen and Bret? Because they brought Neidhart in, and they're going to continue throughout the summer. It's not like Hulk and they were doing 15,000 on their house shows. I mean, you know, but I want to know what they're drawing.
Yeah, they're not drawing great. There's one show they ran up in Canada, in Montreal. Drew like 12,000 people. I don't know.
I'm sure that, I mean, that's good.
And then they have some they run in Ontario to draw 2,000-3,000 people. So, I mean, these are the sons of Canada.
They are.
In Canada.
I was asking earlier why they didn't run it up there. Apparently, this is why.
Now they are, and it's still not drawing.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, you're not seeing anything. All right. So, the big storyline here, moving on throughout the summer, is Undertaker disappeared at the Royal Rumble. We didn't go into great detail on that. He ascended to the heavens. I think that Undertaker was played by Marty Jannetty in the suit when he floated up. He lost the casket match to Yokozuna back in January, and he's been off TV. I think at the time he wanted some time off. He had just got married, I believe, and he wanted some time off. He'd been a loyal worker working with some garbage, and he wasn't a good worker at this point either, but he was a damn sure an attraction. And the fans dug him. Once they turned him babyface, going into SummerSlam, they sell this as Paul Bearer is confronted by Ted DiBiase, and Ted DiBiase had initially brought The Undertaker in with Brother Love in 19, or he had teamed with Ted, but he was brought in by Brother Love, I believe, in 1990 at Survivor Series, and that's where his character began. So Ted DiBiase is kind of transitioned into a managerial role here in 1994, and he's starting to build the corporation. I think it was already fully going by now, and that's worth skipping over because he had a bunch of really jobbers working for him other than like Bam Bam and a couple guys like that. It was not that great, and I remember it. Don't remember it fondly, but I do remember it well. Other than when it started, he brings a fake Undertaker back who ends up being Brian Lee.
Prime time.
Yeah, and he's not a good worker at this point in time either. But he is a big guy, but he's significantly shorter than The Undertaker. Anyway, Paul Bearer on television says, it's not him. You know, he's adamant that this is not real. But they sell this pay-per-view on that, and on the undercard is going to be Owen and Brett and some other stuff, and we're going to get right into that. This is brought to you from the United Center in Chicago, Illinois, where the Bulls play. 23,000 here. Sponsored by Domino's Pizza, SummerSlam 94. They had Leslie Nielsen here. And his whole mission was he was there to find the real Undertaker. Yeah, the guy from Naked Gun. It was actually pretty cool as a kid. I loved the Naked Gun movie, so I kind of marred out Leslie Nielsen being in this pay-per-view. I watched it later on Coliseum home video, but nonetheless, I did enjoy this show, actually. I mean, you're probably going to cringe at some of this, but they drew a big number here. Bam Bam Bigelow and Irwin R. Shyster, who, yes, are a part of the Million Dollar Corporation. They defeat the Head Shrinkers by disqualification, a tag team opener. Alundra Blaze defeats Bull Nakano, defending her women's championship. This match is regarded at that point in time as probably being one of the best women's matches ever. It was highly, highly regarded. I remember not really being that into it. It wasn't like the work we get now. Like Charlotte and Asuka can go out there and have a badass match. It's way different. Razor Ramon with Walter Payton in his corner. Sweetness, baby. The greatest running back. Well, the second greatest. The second greatest running back of all. Barry's the best. There's no – hands down, Barry's the best. Razor defeats Diesel to win back his IC strap in a good match. It really is. Sean's in the corner. Diesel had a little push there as IC champ. I think they were testing the waters, see what the old big man could do. One of the stories I want to tell you, and we're getting ahead of ourselves here, is that Luger apparently was backstage one day, and Vince and I think it was Pat and someone else were looking at the monitor. And, I think Bruce was there. They're looking at the monitor, and Vince was like, he's still big, because everybody was off the juice. Well, yeah,
he's just big anyway. Just
giant. And, so you had Lex was going to kind of be the next Hogan, and now Vince kind of gets it in his mind that Kevin Nash is the new Hulk Hogan. Anyway, he drops the IC title here to Razor. This is a click feud. There are people like Brett and others that will accuse them of only really working super hard. I've never really heard him say anything negative about Kevin Nash. Really not Scott either. But I have definitely heard him talk shit, about the click in general.
Shane Douglas didn't like him.
Well, I could see why. And there are people that would defend Shane. I don't really know how many there are. The next match, Tatanka defeats Lex Luger. This was a big angle where Tatanka had accused Lex Luger of selling out to the Million Dollar Man, doing it for the money, turning heel, brother. And it ended up the whole time this match didn't matter at all. Tatanka wins, and he turns heel on Luger after he wins the damn match. That? Awful angle. Just awful. Jeff Jarrett defeats Mabel after that. Brett defeats Owen Hart in a steel cage match. This is a classic. It's very different from a steel cage match you'd see nowadays. The emphasis was on escape a lot of times. And then, that's how you had to win a WWF steel cage match. You either had to get out of the door or go over the top. So the emphasis in the match is on putting your opponent down and escaping. They do a bunch of quick spots to get out the door, to get over the top. It's a damn awesome match. It really is. To me, it still holds up as a very good match. You just have to look at it a little differently as far as stipulation-wise. Their cage matches were different than the old blood and guts steel cage matches in the NWA and in WCW with, like, war games and stuff. But it was an awesome match. Davey Boy, I think, was Brett's second here. Actually came out to prevent Neidhart from getting in. So Davey's got his job back. You know, he was on the outs with Vince for a long time, and a lot of that had to do with the steroid stuff. So now that it's over, yeah, Vince can kind of start to change his style a little bit. Right. The main event is The Undertaker versus The Undertaker. Pretty garbage match. It ends up going short, and I hear that Mean Mark Calloway, the real Undertaker, was really pissed about this match being as short as it was because Bret Hart went so long. I think Bruce even kind of laid the blame on Razor and Diesel there, but their match was like 16 minutes, it looks like, or 15:03. That doesn't seem overly long for an IC title match. So even if they went maybe, what, 2 minutes long, Bret Hart went 33 minutes. Yeah, that's so, a lot
longer than what
that went probably 5 to 10 minutes too long. Yeah. Well, the way they did the beginning of the match, I see why it was as long as it was, but I say as long as it was. I could see where it'd be a 25-minute type deal,
yeah.
But that's 8 minutes shaved off. So you're giving Taker – I can see why he'd be pissed as shit here to have a 9-minute match because you kind of took – he. This is his first main event spot. You know what I mean? This is his first – well, it's not his first. He main evented – well, he didn't main event with Yoko. He didn't go on last. But this is his first real pay-per-view run. What? I can see why he'd be mad at that. And you know who to be mad at there. So what are we doing house show-wise – between there, we've now – Brett's still the champ. I want you to do maybe like – do like September, October, because I know what happens after that. Just run through and see if there's any big stuff right there. If you don't have anything you want to talk about SummerSlam, you look like you wanted to say something. So.
Since they're selling out, they're overseas in September.
Okay.
So I imagine they are selling out. They're in Germany.
Oh, where Brett's, you know, says his greatest fans are.
Wembley, 10,000 people. Selling out Scotland.
Holds 80,000 or 60 something, whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, it says they're selling out. I'm sure they didn't have the full thing open.
I mean, you're probably right.
Scotland. It says sell out by all these. But they're back in America at the end of September.
Yeah.
They got 8,000 people in Anaheim, California with The Undertaker and Yoko in a casket match.
Mm.
Boston Gardens.
Well, we're getting into that. So now they're running that. So that segues us. So not only I think does Taker get that main event spot at SummerSlam, but now we're going to go to Survivor Series. Actually, no, we're not. Yeah, we do go there next because this comes to us from San Antonio. Who's from there?
Jose Lothario.
Who else?
Sean.
Yeah. Michael Sean Hickenbottom, he's from San Antonio, Texas. They draw 10,000 to the Freeman Coliseum, so not the big arena there. But guess what this show has going for it? It is main evented by The Undertaker and Yokozuna with a casket match with Chuck Norris as the special guest referee. I think I kind of tuned out a little while here. I won't say for a long time, but WCW was bad. And my memory is bad. I want to block out the WCW stuff that was going on at this point in time with Hogan bringing all his buddies over and really ruining the company I cared about the most. So that would actually be what would push me more towards the WWF. I followed the WWF, but I didn't watch Raw all the time back at this point in time because it was boring sometimes. It really was. You got some really shitty matches on TV back then. We take for granted that the show's 3 hours long now, but we get at least one or two good matches every week, don't you think?
Yeah.
We didn't get that shit when I was a kid. So.
Or either one really long Seth Rollins match.
Yeah, well, you're right. So let's run down this card just fast because there's some big stuff that goes on here and immediately after this. The Bad Guys. That's the team of the 1-2-3 Kid, the British Bulldog, Fatu, and Razor Ramon. And Sion. They have Alpha and Lou Albano in their corner. They defeat the Teamsters.
This
Union
is a
Busters, because Vince just does. He hates unions. He wouldn't let the wrestlers, whatever. This is Diesel, Jeff Jarrett, Jim Neidhart, Owen, and Shawn Michaels.
That is
a hell of a team. That's a hell of a team.
What the shit?
They go 21-45. I have never watched a lick of this show, not one match. So I can't tell you what. The Royal Family, Cheesy, Queasy, Sleazy, and Jerry Lawler. These are little people. They defeat Clowns R Us, which is Doink the Clown with Dink the Clown, Pink the Clown, and Wink the Clown. That, bye. This match is interesting. The
this
next
is
one.
Terrible.
A 35-minute match. This is why I've avoided this show.
Bob Backlund.
Bob Backlund got this monster push. He turned heel on Raw, on Bret Hart, and he defeats Bret Hart for the world title in a submission match. And they did a callback to how Bob had lost to the Iron Sheik, which preceded by a month or two, Hogan winning the title back in 84. At the end of 83, Backlund had Arnie Skolin in his corner, who's a longtime friend of Vince McMahon and an old-time manager back in the 60s and 70s.
Probably. Was he still backstage?
Oh, I would assume so. He handled the money. He was the payoff guy. He was one of Vince's confidants. This was a big-time guy in the WWF. But he didn't have anything to do with this match, but he was with Bob Backlund back in the day. And they did a callback where Arnie had thrown the towel in and Bob didn't really submit against the Iron Sheik to the Camel Clutch, but Bob threw the towel in and the ref counted that as a pinfall. Well, this happens here. Owen tricks his mother at ringside.
That evil
Helen.
Owen.
Yeah. Tricks her into throwing the towel in for Brett and making him submit to the chicken wing. So Brett drops the title. That match sounds like it is trash. The next match is the Million Dollar Team. So Brett's run's over, and we're going to get into something else in just a second. The Million Dollar Team of Bam Bam Bigelow, Jimmy Del Rey, King Kong Bundy, Tatanka, and Dr. Tom Pritchard, with Jim Cornette and DiBiase in their corner, defeat Guts and Glory, Adam Bomb, Bart Gunn, Billy Gunn, Lex Luger, and Mabel. Could not be. I mean, this show just is. There's enough. The opening match sounds like it could have been pretty damn good. But other than that, I don't think anything could. The main event is The Undertaker versus Yokozuna in a casket match. Chuck Norris, special guest referee. Now, Yoko's not the champion, so now Undertaker can beat him. And he can get his main event shit in. We're going to go to a house show at Madison Square Garden right after this. And I think it's just a few days later. Because that would have been, I think they still ran Survivor Series like the day before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So they were running on a Wednesday pay-per-view there for two or three years or so. Maybe several years. I'm not quite honest. They go to Madison Square Garden. What happens, Taylor? This is where old Big Daddy Cool Diesel gets coronated as the next guy. He beats the newly minted WWF champion Bob Backlund in 8 seconds with a boot and a power bomb and a 1-2-3. The garden goes electric. Diesel runs around the ring. If you've never seen that moment, it's actually pretty iconic. Diesel has a pretty good celebration. He was the champ, and I wasn't mad about it because I remember it. I think it happened before they even recognized Bob as the champion on television. I think that might have run. Was the show the next day?
It was the 26th.
Okay, so 3 days later. So it would have been that weekend, and they ran a card there. Diesel's the champ. Now, Kevin Nash has talked several times. We're going to wrap the year up. We're not going to go into the next pay-per-view. I don't think we need to. We'll just wrap it up. Diesel ends the year as the world champion. There's no more pay-per-views. Vince has made his mind up that he's going with the click. He's going with the new hand. And so here we go. Kevin Nash, Big Daddy Cool Diesel himself, one of the dudes with attitudes. He'd actually broken off from Shawn. I forgot to mention that. In that elimination match, I'm pretty sure Shawn walks out on the team is what I think happened. I might be wrong. But anyway, we're going to end 1994 there, and our next episode is going to continue the new generation. We're going to start with 1995. We're going to kick everything off maybe with a little house show information and whatnot. Kevin Nash is your world champion. The Intercontinental Champion at this point in time is still Razor Ramon. And the tag team champions, I believe, did I say there was the Head Shrinkers? I think that's what was going on at this point in time. Anyway, so we've got some cartoony stuff. Vince dodged a bullet, and we're going to throw together to release at some point, even though we didn't release our last watch along. It doesn't really matter.
We've been busy on the weekends.
We have, and we're gonna release two for the one for each part of this. So we're gonna do some from 93 and 94, and I think we got some really kick ass shit to cover. We might watch one bad match and a couple good ones, and they're not gonna be that long. We're not gonna do any of these damn 30 minutes or anything like that. Well, that wraps it up. For the new generation, 93, 94, anything you want to just throw on and in there? I know you do. It doesn't have to take long.
Throw in on what?
I mean, what do you have to say about this era? I know you don't really remember it.
No.
But this is this is sort of shaping what we'd get. Because Diesel as champion is an experiment, and we're going to go over that.
This is when my favorite wrestler rose to prominence.
Absolutely, he did. And he was a... He was the showstopper even back then, so he might not have been the main event, but he definitely was the showstopper, and he was going to go on to become a really, really big deal and the best worker in the business, no doubt about it. Sean's 94 was awesome, by the way. I knew he was a badass worker back then. It was awesome to watch him, but that's all we got to talk about. That's all I want to talk about today. So anyway, you know the drill. Like us, follow us, give us some feedback on iTunes if you listen to us there. You shoot us an email at talkingtightspod@gmail.com. You know the drill. We've gone over it. Tired of begging, really. This is Talking Tights, your host Wesley Burris and my co-host Taylor Griggs signing off. And give us a listen. We got a watch along for you this weekend. Thanks, guys.
Thinking about it.